Docker Technology Partners has been around a little over 20 years. We're a managed service provider primarily based in Arkansas. We've got a few clients in Tennessee and Oklahoma, but primarily in Arkansas, founded here in central Arkansas. We have offices in North Little Rock, Conway, and which is both in central Arkansas, and then an office up in northwest Arkansas in the Rogers area. So typical managed service work has been our core for, like I said, over 20 years. We've also got a cloud practice and a separate kind of cybersecurity practice as well that is, we've kind of brought on, as a lot of IT companies have over the last few years. So 109 associates. And been very fortunate to have some great growth and new client relationships over the last 10 years.
So you said three locations?
Three locations, yes.
109 associates. And how much of that growth was organic versus M&A?
All organic.
Okay, so I mean, to frame what we're talking about is we're a company that's had a fair amount of growth over 20 years, been around the block one or two times, and is dealing with different issues right now as a mature MSP in multiple markets, as opposed to a three or four person shop. But that is a journey you have enjoyed.
Keep doing the company. I think I was associate number 12 or 13 back 9 years ago, and you were there a few years before me. So we've definitely seen that.
So
I think I was.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think I was associate number 11, and we've been fortunate to bring on some great talent with our company in the past 10 years. Kenny certainly being a key part of that, and we've had just phenomenal growth and good success. We also like data to help us make decisions. We've been using MSP CFO for a few years. It's really helped us understand at the client level, some profitability or challenges. So we're not intending to put a plug in for you, but your tool has been very helpful for us in how we run our business.
I appreciate that. Well, let's talk a little bit about this. So not about the product, but about, you know, going from the journey between the two of you, going from employee number 9 to where you are today to where you will be in a year.
If you want to give the history, and then I can add on a little more about the future.
Sure. So when I joined the company, we didn't have much of a sales force at all. We had a gentleman who was in that role, and then he stepped out of the role. And Kenny and I had worked together for 10 to 15 years previous to that, at a company called Axiom, and we were good friends. And I knew we needed, I'm not a sales-oriented guy. I'm an engineer by background. But I knew we needed someone like Kenny, and I wanted Kenny to come join our team. And so it happens that we caught him at a time where he was ready to move into a different role from the company he was at. So he came on and joined us. And at the time I hired Kenny, I knew that he would make a huge difference in the growth of our company and how, just because he's a very talented fellow. And I also knew that he would be a succession plan, that he would be someone who could fill my shoes as I'm 63 years old and Kenny's 18 years younger than I am. So I knew that for the long haul, our company needed someone to replace me, and I knew Kenny would be the perfect guy to do that. So fast forward 10 years, we've done that transition. Kenny moved into the CEO president role on January 1 of 2020, and just in time for COVID. So and the challenges and stresses of that, and he's done a great job doing that. But I guess you want me to dive in a little bit more to the transition and how we did that, or
One of the questions I have, yeah, is, you know, we talk to a lot of customers who are going through their journey,
yeah,
growing from the two-person shop to the starting to hire managers, to starting to think about transition. And obviously, if you read any of the trade journals, the transitions more often than not are about private equity. Can you talk a little bit about how you decided to make the transition internally, and then how you think the skill sets evolved from building, the skill sets required from building the company to where it is, to managing it to its next phase of growth, and how that the transition worked well there?
Yeah, I'll take a shot at that, Keith, and you can jump in. Okay. But if we think back to 10 years ago, as a company with, a dozen people and a lot of great engineering talent that were generalists, right, who were guys that just knew everything about the technology for our specific clients. And what we've had to do to kind of scale and grow is to be a little more specialized in that. So specialized by, in the early days, our primary engineers would own the client relationship. They would do all the technical support. And it was kind of a one-stop shop. And what we realized is, that was not going to scale. So the investment to bring on account management, right, who would help manage those client relationships, renewals, upsell, kind of be the voice to the customer, watching this engineering space just explode into where you've got to have network engineers and systems engineers and a cyber. So I think part of what we've seen over the last 10 years is just it's too complicated to not be able to specialize in areas. So we're privately owned, and so we don't have some of those private equity pressures that a lot of larger MSPs have. So we were able to invest and get our ownership group to buy in on investment in account management, in sales, in leadership for a network team and a systems team and a cyber team. So I attribute a lot of that to our success is being able to invest in those key areas, and it's paid off really well for us.
Yeah, I think the thing that I would add to that is we decided, where it just kind of evolved for us, that we became specialists and deep in the healthcare space. We were able to be able to, I guess, about 60 to 70% of our business are with clinics, healthcare clinics, or with hospitals. And so there, about that time, as we were, the Affordable Care Act and EMRs became mandated, and there was a fair amount of technology and complexity that many of these organizations needed help with. So we were able to go deep there and to help them with that transition to electronic medical record systems. And that's been really good. We've been able to specialize and go deep and provide healthcare consulting and security, as well as doing their IT infrastructure work. So I think that's been one of the differentiators, is understanding the industry for a big hunk of our clients and being able to help them navigate through the complexity.
On that note, so obviously managing a company your size has, I can speak this through running a very small company, some drudgery. I imagine looking at health insurance presentations annually is not the most fun part of your job. And what do you still have a passion about with the business at this scale? What problem do you face that you get pretty excited about digging your teeth into? Both of you on that.
I think that's part of why Keith and I work so well together, is we're wired differently. And so that partnership's been able to, so we can both kind of, we're both probably wired a little different to focus on things. For me, it's about client relationships and going out and helping clients solve problems. And in the case now where we're primarily Arkansas based, how do we take this great work that we do for these clients and take that to Tennessee or Oklahoma and able to serve clients in those areas as well? So I think that's what my passion area is how we continue to grow and just grow great relationships. We think of ourselves as not an IT vendor. If we get in a situation where we're just an IT vendor with a client, that's not good for either one of us. We want to be a strategic partner in health, and technology is such a big part of all businesses now. We want to be that partner. So that's really what excites me.
Now, Larry, I think as leaders of companies, one of the most important things we can do is establish a culture. I love Drucker's quote, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. If there's one thing that I think I did early on when I joined Odontio, was to establish a set of core values that I believed in and that I thought were good for Odontio. And they're really very simple. It's committed to our client success, unquestionable integrity, and then operating as one team with humility and respect, and that applies to how we do that with internally as well as with our clients. So in terms of my passion, I don't feel like it's changed since I joined the company. It's to do those things and do it well. So that's kind of what I'm still passionate about. And the beauty of that thing is we use it and we talk about it. It's not just things on the wall. We talk about it in all of our meetings. We use it when we think about when we're interviewing candidates to come to our company. And the beauty of it is we've been able to attract some really talented people who share those core values, and they get excited about it. They see, hey, this isn't just something that is on a wall. It's something that's real here. And so I guess that's the thing that I'm still passionate about, is us sticking with those core values.
When you talk about that, and in response, there's a question that actually came in from the audience. The question is, can you explain why you felt that having generalist engineers versus specialists wasn't scalable?
I think it was the technology changes. I mean, I think just from the days of, you know, having a systems engineer who understood how firewalls and things work, now, you know, there's so much specialized around wireless and firewalls and routers and phone systems. And so I think just as the technology's advanced, as well as the certification requirements from the vendors, and we've just seen the need to specialize in that. And so, you know, it's hard. It goes back to that core value Keith talked about on one team. So now, instead of one or two people touching a client, you know, it may take six, right? Because you've got this specialized. So it's been a challenge, but we found to be able to really go deep and stay on top of these technologies, we've got to have some specialized skills. And then you can go recruit a wireless engineer, you know, and you can go find those, right? Whereas finding people who are interested in doing all things networking, or finding people who are interested in all things cyber, people tend to be interested in a little more specialized. So we've also had to do it from a recruiting perspective.
I think the only thing I would add to that is, whether you're a generalist or specialist, kind of depends upon where you sit. So we have guys who specialize in networking, but they're, in some ways, they may be generalists around networking topics. And then we may have some people that go really deep and checkpoint firewalls, for example, or something like that. So some of our people are, you know, would call themselves generalists of networking skills and capabilities, but, you know, they're still specialists on networking. So I don't want to give the view that our people are just really narrow and very specialized in the way, and what we do as managed service providers, there has to be some level of generality because of the differences in different clients and client environments. Hope that helps a little bit.
No, it does. Just one question for the crowd, and feel free to text the panelists. There was an issue with audio issues. We might let out at Zoom, so if anybody has a problem hearing, just please text us, and I'm not sure I can fix it, but just something to be aware of. If you could hear us fine, just confirm that as well in the chat for the meeting. Another question is, with your engineers and with really, you know, they're different people doing different jobs at different levels, how do you measure the quality of your associates?
I think we looked at that multiple ways. So one is just from a productivity standpoint, right? Is billable hours, are they billing hours? We've got billable hour targets for our folks based on the job role and the clients that they support. So there's a kind of objective perspective there. And then also through quarterly ROCs. So we're a big EOS fraction shop here, so everyone gets quarterly rocks assigned, and so that's a measure of success. Did you accomplish the 3, 4, 5 rocks that you were given? And then the other big thing we do that we're particularly proud of is in our review process, we rate our people according to our core values. So part of that process where you do an annual review is not just compensation or it's not just the specifics, but how are you against the core values that we've set? So I'd say those are some of the primary ways we measure success.
May I ask then, do you ever find there's a divergence between somebody who is quantitatively productive or quantitatively unproductive? And if you look at them on more of a culture values perspective, they're hitting the target. What kind of person hits the target on one end but misses on the other? Or do most people, if they fit the culture, they're probably doing the job right?
Yeah, more times than not, it works. They're doing it right. I think that's sometimes the challenge, and that's why our hiring process against these core values is so important. We have a very much an on-site presence with our clients. I mean, most of our professionals go on-site. Some are 5 days a week on-site with clients, and some, you know, a day a week, a day a month. So we try to really do a good job on the front end of hiring to make sure not only do they have the technical skills, but they've got those relationship skills as well, not only with the client, but also to work with the other teams. So I would say when it doesn't work, it's typically on more of that relationship side than it is the technical side, because we can train on the technical piece. What's important to us is to hire people that meet the core values and can communicate well. That's really our secret sauce.
Right, so it sounds like the core values are a leading indicator for success, and the billable hours is just a confirmation that things are working. That's interesting. On that, though, one thing I do want to tie it back a little bit to is if we can talk a little bit, you know, core values is tough to quantify and measure. It's more of a subjective view, which doesn't make it not doable, but it's hard to use metrics around. Can you talk a little bit how, and I would think a company with 100 million years and 3 locations and multiple, you know, hundreds possibly of clients and agreements, how you leverage metrics for your success? And I want to make it clear, this is not a discussion about MSP CFO. If you use it, that's fine. But there are other fantastic tools out there, including just some that exist within the PSA. What metrics do you look at, and how do you use them? One of the things that we talk about on our side is there's the concept of actionable versus information. If you look at your sales every quarter, that's fantastic to understand how you're growing, but it doesn't necessarily tell you there's a problem. If you have a client that there is a particular problem, you have to bear that out, then you go fix that problem. So with that knowledge, with that sort of framework, how do you look for actionable metrics to drive either growth to the top line or growth to the bottom line?
Do you want to start?
Sure. Well, I think it's gross margin. When we look at a gross margin at the client level, we see and understand, okay, what did we miss on this? Why are we not making why are we losing money on this client? Is it because of who we have on it? Is it because we just priced it wrong? Or is it because their environment changed? So we use that information to then at renewal, you know, go back to the client and say, wait, we've got to, you know, this environment's changed and we need to increase the price. And, and most time the client understands and agrees and likes the service we're doing. But occasionally they'll say, we're not willing to pay that. And they'll go somewhere else, and that's okay. I'd say gross margin at the client level is one of the things that we do. We also kind of segment. We have different types of agreements with clients, and so we look at those at a group as well. So we have this fixed price type of agreement, fixed price, fixed scope. And that's one type of agreement. And then we have this other type of agreement that's more of a block hours. We call it a flex agreement. And so we look at those things as a group of, you know, clients that have this type of agreement to help us understand as well at a macro level, okay, what is it about this set of that the clients in this agreement that we're missing? Is it something that we need to tighten up in the contract or the statement of work to address a specific issue that seems to be a root problem for us as clients?
Larry, the other thing we have is we have a weekly scorecard that we look at every Monday that has leading indicator metrics, right? It's number of opportunities in the pipeline at a certain stage. It's number of closed opportunities, and we have a target for that. It's upsell of existing clients and accounts receivable, billable hours. I mean, we have, 10 metrics as part of that EOS deal that we look at on a weekly basis. And so if some of those are off, if AR is drifting up or billable hours is drifting down, or we haven't closed a deal in 3 weeks, we raise those as issues and dig into them. So I think that's something that we've done fairly recently that has really helped us kind of say, okay, let's don't wait till month end or quarter end and go, why are we short from budget? We should know week by week how we're doing if we're looking at those metrics and taking action on them.
When did you implement EOS?
This year, January. So we've been at it 11 months or 10 months now.
And how would you describe it again? Many companies in our space are embracing EOS, even outside of our space. It's really prevalent. How would you compare life before EOS, where you were metrics-based driven, to life after, or life during?
I think when we did the transition, the CEO transition from Keith to myself, what I recognize about myself is I'm a lot more, let's talk about this today, or hey, here's something interesting. And so I'm not as detailed as Keith. And so what I found is we needed that structure, right? I need that structure to be able to do a good job and keep us on track. So for me personally, it was a structure, a methodology that would kind of keep us focused and keep us from just talking about what I want to talk about in our leadership meeting. And for us, it's been very good to have that rigor and that structure to talk about things week in, week out. I'm not going to lie, it's tough every week following the same agenda. But again, some of that's just self-awareness on my part. So we've kind of gone all in on it. I mean, we're following the level 10 meetings. We're doing the quarterly rocks. We're doing our quarterly planning sessions. I mean, I'd say we're 90% compliant. I mean, there's a few things that we've kind of adjusted from the traction book. But I think especially in the midst of this CEO transition for our team, it was a really good time to say, okay, we're going to do something new. We have a new leadership team. I mean, we have a new VP of sales. We have a new VP of delivery. I mean, we've changed a lot over the last year. So it was a really good way to kind of get us all on the same page and talk in the same language.
Sure. We have about 5 minutes left. We wanted to make this one a relatively concise call. I don't want to take too much time. If anyone has any questions, please feel free to drop them in and we'll try to answer them in real time. While there's one that's just come up, we'll see if there's any more, and we'll get to that. But if you do have them, ask now, and we'll lose the people. One question I have for you before we get to the questions. What are the top three things that you think, whether you're a 5-person MSP or 120-person MSP, do you think are just, I wish I knew this earlier. This is just so fundamental, and it took me a while to get my mind around it, and now it's super important. It sounds like EOS might be one of them. What would you say are the top three things there?
I would go back to core values, and I think we can't underestimate that. And I probably undervalued that my first few years at Adafio, and especially in this role, and just seeing how much of a success. Make those part of your DNA, and if you're not comfortable with it, get some help to set those. Obviously, EOS, I would say that. But I think the other thing is just the metrics and just making sure you know the numbers. I think one of the things that, I'm an accountant. I kind of came from that background. Keith's an engineer. He knows the numbers better than anybody. But just making sure you really know things like your margin and watching your AR. And I think those metrics are things, as I see other managed service companies, even in our area, and we talked to them, I could tell the financial acumen is a little bit lower. And so if that's not the way you're wired, get educated, get some help, but you've got to run your business by the numbers. So those would be my three.
If you're allowed to disagree.
I agree with that, and I would add to it relationships. You know, Arkansas is really a small community, and when we do something really well for a client, and then they tell, then one of their peers comes to them and saying, "Hey, we're having trouble with our IT. How do you guys do your IT?" And they say, "Hey, we love these guys at Adopia. They care about our business. They're committed to our success, and they're doing a great job. You need to give them a call." So a fair amount of our growth has just come from people who in the community have businesses who either know us individually or know one of our clients. And so just that idea of having a good reputation in our market space and relationships with people in our area, I think has been real key. And we've got, well, anyway, that's what I would add to that.
Great. Okay, we have just a couple questions here. They're pretty much just the two questions that are the same question. If anybody has another one, feel free to drop it in. And that is whether you guys self-implemented EOS or you hired an outside consultant.
Yeah, we started with a consultant. I put a plug in for Dusty Pruitt. He is excellent. He's located in Northwest Arkansas, but he covers several states. So he helped us with our first 3 days and then conducted our first couple of quarterly planning sessions. After the first couple quarter sessions, we've got a really strong leadership team, and so what we did was we kind of moved to self-maintenance mode on it now. So I would definitely recommend to start with a consultant. There's a lot of good ones out there, and then you could possibly do it yourself. But I'd start with one for sure.
And the other thing I'd add to that, Larry, there's a couple of tools out there in the marketplace to do help you run your meetings, your EOS meetings with committees, and we landed on a tool called EOS. Is that the right name, Kenny?
Yeah,
EOS. I'm sorry, you broke up. Say it one more time, please.
The name of the tool that we ended up using, EOS 90.
Yeah, 90 IO, I think what the tool is called.
Just the five characters, EOS 90?
Yes. Or 90IO, is that right, Kenny?
That's right.
Yeah. So we've had really good experience with that tool. It's helped us, and there's others that are good out there as well. But we can just speak to this one that it works really well for us.
Okay. Oh, 90IO. All right. Perfect. Well, that's about our half hour. One thing I want to throw in: we got a comment from somebody typed in from over in the UK. And he said that what you, first of all, he said very nice things about you two, which is always nice to hear. And everything he said rings true with what he has done, and he went the PE route. I believe he was written up in the paper today. They did another acquisition that the company was, this is a friend of the company. I'll leave the name out for the moment. But they, if you read Channel EV, I think they're written up today. And they find that they happen to go PE, but they followed the culture and the approach, and I know this company for some time. One more question came in. I'm sorry, how do you manage your payout on your bonuses for your techs? Billable hours, agreement efficiency, certifications. Is it subjective? Is it objective? Is it formula-based? What's your view on that? And that'll be our last question.
We've been all over the board on this, so I'll try to net it out. So we do pay for certifications. So when our professionals get certifications, we do have a bonus tied to that. What we do today is we allocate a percentage of our net income to a bonus pool for our professionals. We used to have it purely math-driven based on productivity and efficiency, but there were always exceptions to that. So what we do now is we allocate that percentage of net income to the professional teams, and our team leaders allocate it at their discretion. So if someone did a really great job on an internal project to help us with a SOC 2 compliance, you know, we didn't want them to be penalized because they weren't working on client billable work. So today we're at a more subjective, and we let the team leaders allocate that bonus based on what they feel like their team's done.
That's great. One of the things that MSPCFO, our approach that we do, we built this working with C-level operations, is on productivity, but every method of doing it has its pros and cons. You go through a subjective method, and then you have someone question it. You go through a predictable formulaic-based method, and then you wonder, are they padding available hours, or are they working on a non-revenue onboarding project, and how do you compensate them for that? There are ways around it. Nothing's perfect. Nothing's easy. You just want to make sure your employees feel appreciated, and they want to stay around, and they want to strive to be more productive. And there's many ways to arrive at that solution. Well, listen, I want to thank you both for coming on the call today. I want to thank everyone who was took a half hour, or a little bit more than a half hour, out of their day today. We are going to continue to have calls. Keep be aware of additional postings. If you have any questions on metrics, obviously you can reach out to us at mspcfo.com. My name is Larry, L. Coburn, mspcfo.com. I'll be happy to talk to you and try to answer any questions you have, how some companies are being successful. As I said when I started, we are not the only game in town. There are other reporting companies. If you want different reporting companies, please do feel free to reach out to them as well. Again, thank you guys both, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Bye-bye.